You're listening to Rendezvous with a Writer with Bobby Jean and Jim Bell, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to Rendezvous with a Writer, where readers and writers meet, and story is everything. We're your hosts tonight, Jim and Bobby Bell. You've just been listening to Hot Texas by the Hot Texas Swing Band, our friend Alex Dormont.
Yes, and we are so delighted to have you with us for episode 174, and we are so excited. It's the first Thursday of the month, of course, kicking off March, and so you know what that means.
Henry Park
is with us tonight.
Yes.
And here he is. And
greetings from Brooklyn.
You're on the East Coast tonight, right, Henry?
Yes, I am.
Yes, yes. And Henry.
We have special guest. What are we going to do here?
That's okay. Go ahead. Announce the next name. We have a full house. We're so eager to get everybody on. Who's next?
Bob Bowes Bell.
Oh my gosh. You know, Bob and us have a lot in common.
We do.
Well, we share the same last name.
Is that it?
our original name was Bjelda, Norwegian. Came in via Milwaukee and they said your name is Bell. It's one of those.
Okay. Well, we're delighted to have Bob with us. We consider him, of course, a great American storyteller, and we're going to tell you more about him in a moment. And who else do we have tonight?
See Courtney Joyner.
And here's Court. Court to his friends. Oh, my gosh. Don't you love it when you see all these faces on the screen?
It's great.
Oh, it's great.
All experts in the West.
Yes. And another thing that we thought was so fun is to have all three of you who are connected, were connected with, or are very connected to True West Magazine. So it's like True West Magazine, our favorite magazine.
We got lots of copies tonight.
The house. So let's see. And there's Henry. Oh, Henry, you are joining us again from where?
I'm joining you from beautiful Brooklyn.
From Brooklyn. And Bob, where are you tonight?
I'm in lovely downtown, well, not downtown, on the outskirts of Cave Creek, Arizona.
Arizona. And Mr. Court, where are you tonight?
In the ghettos of Sherman Oaks.
We're coast to coast and in between. Isn't that so fun?
It is.
Bobby, where are you guys?
Oh, we're in Albuquerque. Yeah.
We are. Yes. New Mexico.
Yeah, but we like to think that we are in the publishing offices of True West Magazine. That's where we are tonight.
Okay. All right.
So let's see. Shall we have Henry get us started with his monthly report?
What's going on in the film industry?
Yeah, Henry.
Okay.
Take it away.
All righty. Well, we all know what the saddest news is this month, and I'll get to it in a little bit. But first, some potentially positive news. MGM Plus has greenlighted an 8-part limited series based on The Magnificent Seven. It will star Matt Dillon. That's the actor, not the ghost of James Arness, who will also be a producer. He'll play the part of Chris, who was played first and best by Yul Brynner, then by George Kennedy, Lee Van Cleef, Michael Biehn in the 1998 series, and Denzel Washington in 2016. The producer-creator is Tim Kring, who has had a very successful career creating and writing continuing story dramas, including Crossing Jordan and the hugely popular Heroes franchise. And before you say Matt Dillon in a Western, don't forget Drugstore Cowboy. Okay, not really a Western. But Dylan is a fine actor who has done a number of contemporary rural stories, including Tex with Ben Johnson, Kansas. And in 2023, he co-starred with Patricia Arquette in the series High Desert. The Magnificent Seven is set to start shooting in Calgary in June. They've moved the story away from Mexico to an 1880s peaceful Quaker village where those Quakers are slaughtered by a bloodthirsty mercenary group working for a ruthless land-grabbing dirtbag. The bad news is, doesn't this sound too much like the plot of the horrendous 2016 remake? Now, I've been in the screenwriting business and the writing about film business since 1976. Been to many terrible screenings, but the most embarrassing ever was when I was writing a True West article about the remake, and Sony had a screening of the Magnificent Seven remake in the magnificent Irving Thalberg screening room just for me and my wife. And it was awful. Badly scripted, badly directed, miscast, overacted, and underacted. And the only other people there were a couple of execs and Sony publicists, and I'm trying so hard to say something nice. The action was great, the tech credits were strong, but that was it. Now, hopefully, these folks will learn from the classic and not the reboot. That's fingers crossed, at least. Earlier this week, CBS and Paramount Plus premiered Taylor Sheridan's Marshals, the spinoff of Yellowstone, starring Luke Rhimes, reprising his Casey Dutton character, with Brecken Merrill back as his son Tate, a role he's been playing since he was 10. He's 18 now. Now, also along from Yellowstone are Mo Brings Plenty as Mo, Gil Birmingham as Thomas Rainwater, and Tatanka Means as Miles Kittle. Now, I'm going to explain the setup to the new show. I'm not going to give away any spoilers about the plot, but I know I wasn't unique in not knowing how Yellowstone ended, and I did my homework. So if you don't want to know about that, I'm putting my hands over my ears while I tell those spoilers. If you don't want to hear it, and when I take my hands off, it'll be new stuff. Kevin Costner's John Dutton got whacked by a professional killer who was hired by his son, Jamie's girlfriend. Jamie's sister, Beth, found out her brother was behind their dad's killing, so she killed Jamie. Turns out I was right when I suggested the Duttons could have been named the Borgias. Beth and Casey sell Yellowstone back to the Indians for $1.25 million with a little plot of land for Casey and his wife and son to live on. When the Marshals begins, it's 2 years later, and we learn Casey's wife and Tate's mother, Monica, played by Kelsey Asbill, has been dead for a year.
It does open with that.
Now, Casey is a former Navy SEAL and a former SEAL partner, now a Marshal, turns up and asks for his help, which means being temporarily deputized. From there on, you've got to watch. Yesterday, season 5 of the INSP series Wild West Chronicles premiered. It's the show where Jack Elliott plays lawman-turned-journalist Bat Masterson interviewing contemporaries about their adventures. It's entertaining and exciting, and the history is very good. There's a new True West out, and Route 66, The Mother Road, is the cover story. There's an article about Wyatt Earp on Route 66 by our own Bob Bowes-Bell. The father of the mother load may sadly be the final article for True West by L.J. Martin, who recently passed away. Please check my column, TR's Return, about premiering season 2 of Elkhorn, INSP's Teddy Roosevelt series, in the North Dakota Badlands town where the story takes place. I have two new articles on the INSP blog about writers Zane Grey and Louis L'Amour. The new Henry's Western Roundup features interviews with the producer, director, and the star of Frontier Crucible. Now, of course, the biggest news in the Western world is the deaths within a week of each other of acting legends Robert Duvall at 95 and Robert Carradine at 71. I had the great privilege of interviewing both men at some length. With Duvall, I was interviewing him before a Lonesome Dove reunion Robert Carradine I interviewed a few times about the Cowboys, about the Long Riders, and other Westerns. I have two quick stories I'd like to share about them that co-workers told me. Diane Lane, playing Lorena or Lori Darlin in Lonesome Dove, just loved Duvall, but she didn't realize that he was in character for the entire shoot. When a few months later, they were touring together promoting the show, he was nice, but he was Robert Duvall. And she wanted to ask him, what did you do with Gus? Now, Tom Selleck told me that when they were making Monty Walsh, Robert Carradine told him that when he was making The Big Red One, Lee Marvin would show up on set every day, whether he was working or not. And Bobby asked him why. Lee said, because the set is where it's at. Mm-hmm. I'm quoting from Selleck here, quote, Bobby is the guy who said day one in front of all the Slash Y Cowboys, the set is where it's at. Nobody goes to the trailer. And he set that ethic, unquote. So they were always in the background, riding horses, moving wagons, making the ranch seem real and alive. Bobby told me that now Selleck never stops saying the set is where it's at. I think our guests had dealings with both gentlemen, and I was hoping they might have some memories to share.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you want that now, Henry, or did you have other things to cover, or would you like to open that up now for Bob?
I think it's a good time for it.
Yeah. 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 Bob or Henry Court, would one of you want to talk a little about Duvall or Bobby?
I'll leave it to Bob.
That's fine. You go. I really don't. I don't have a personal story other than the fact that I love their work. And I met Robert briefly at a book festival, but I really don't have no stories.
Court?
Well, you know, Bobby Carradine was such a nice guy. And I think the thing that's gotten everyone is anyone who had ever encountered him was so shocked that he took his own life because it seemed so unlikely. Because he was an up person. And when we had him in the Western Portraits book, gosh, he was just so excited and absolutely there. And he and I got along pretty famously because, of course, I knew a great deal about his dad. And Robert always struck me as kind of being the peacemaker of the Carradines. Because, you know, David didn't have the greatest relationship with his father. And so he was always, you know, laying the groundwork, I think, for like family reunions and smoothing the way for, you know, absolutely everybody. But I can tell you, of course, David was on the cover of Steve's and my book, and Carver was very tight with David. And then Robert came along. We could not get Keith. He refused outright to be any part of it. Although I know there just was a nice memorial luncheon for Robert the other day hosted by Rob Word, and Keith came, which was very nice. And
unexpected, I think, yeah.
I think very unexpected. Yeah. And at one of Rob Word's lunches, I brought a still from House of Frankenstein because I knew Robert was going to be there, but so was Robert Pine. Very, very nice guy, as we all know. And the thing was, it was a shot of John Carradine with Anne Gwynn. And John Carradine was Dracula, and he's trying to hypnotize him. Anne Gwynn is Robert Pine's mother-in-law. Huh. And there is Bobby Carradine's dad trying to hypnotize her and carry her off to the land of the undead. Oh, they love it. They just got such a big charge out of that. And, yeah. But I really like Robert. He was a good guy. And again, this is such a tragedy beyond the death, because unfortunately it probably was a preventable thing. I mean, I don't want to speak out of turn, but you know, again, suicide is so terrible. And in this case, at least to the layman, and I think a lot of people who were around Robert, had absolutely no idea that something like this would even be possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let me say something.
Sure.
Well, maybe I just want to do a quick Robert Duvall thought. You know, my dad was not the toughest, the easiest guy to live with, okay? So I went and saw the movie The Great Santini. I got done with the movie. I went home. I called my dad up. And I said, "You seen that movie?" He said, "No, I haven't seen it." I said, "You ought to go see it." And he says, "Why?" "Because it's you."
Yeah, he wasn't. Yeah, and that's true. Well, since we're talking about film, we have a question to ask all three of you. Well, first, maybe we should ask this one. Do you have a favorite Western film? And not to put anybody on the spot, but, or, you know, one or two just top favorite films that you would say to people you need to go and see. Henry, we'll start with you. What would you say?
I always go back to John Ford's Stagecoach.
Oh, yeah.
Which in the book is the one I write the most about. It's because I think that was like three different articles that got sort of compressed into one.
Yeah. And I'm holding up.
I call it the Citizen Kane of Westerns.
I'm holding up for those that might be listening, Henry's book, The Greatest Westerns Ever Made and the People Who Made Them. And I have not been somebody that has watched a lot of Westerns, and this has become my primer. I open it up and I say, "What are we going to watch tonight?" And then we pick something from the book and we watch it, and I read and I get notes and go, "Oh, you need to play that back again because such and such happened." So this is a terrific book for those of you that maybe know about contemporary Westerns, but you'd really like to get back into just what is Western film and what's it all about. So you said Stagecoach. Is there a second one, Henry?
Oh, gosh. The second one changes from time to time. It's probably something by Bud Bedeker, but next week it might be The Magnificent Seven. I keep rolling through them, but just Stagecoach stays at the top.
Yeah. And Bob, what about you?
Well, I would go, I have a tombstone to me, if it had done the original script, it would be the greatest Western ever done. It is so magnificent. And they didn't. They fired Kevin Jarre. I was on the set, I believe, the day he got fired. Because they were setting up a scene. They were west of Tombstone in Sonoyta area. And they were setting up the scene, and I could just see them setting it up. And Doc Holliday, Val Kilmer, and Kurt Russell were on horseback, and they rode into the cowboy camp. And somebody mouths off to Wyatt Earp, and so he throws his hat over to Doc. And by the way, for the close-ups, they're sitting on ladders, which I the horses, they don't need the horses. They're on ladders and, you know, sitting there going, "Yeah, well, you know." And anyway, Kurt Russell gets off and they go into this, you know, Hollywood fight, pow, you know, pow, like this, okay? And Kevin Jarre goes, no, and he goes in there and he does this. It's Queensberry. He did, I believe he did a scene like that in The Trackers. And so then Kurt goes, he won't do it. So they take a break. And Kevin Jarre comes over to where I'm sitting with Jeff Morey. And I say to him, "These are the best hats I've ever seen in a Western ever." And he smiled and said, "Thank you." And when I walked on the set, the AD said, "No pictures." He saw a camera on my neck. Okay. So I'm sitting there and I'm going, "That's Kevin Jarre." And I go, "I just took a picture." And it's the last picture of him on that movie. They fired him like the next day. In fact, I'm suspicious that it was that scene that just met him.
No, well.
Okay. But that's not my favorite Western. Okay. I have to just say, to me, I like weather. I like weather in movies. Okay. And they're rarely done. They hate to do it because it's snowing one day and the next day it's not, and they can't do the continuity. And so they're on the sound stage and everything looks fake. That's not true in McCabe and Mrs. Miller. He went up to Oregon or somewhere and built a town out in the middle of nowhere to get away from the suits. That's the story. Is that right? I believe it's right. Anyway, He's up there, he's up there. And so in most movies, okay, you go there in a movie town at the on the Warner Brothers lot or whatever, and they bring in professional carpenters, and the carpenters, you know, do the door and everything. Everything's clean because they're professional carpenters. In McCabe and Mrs. Miller, Warren Beatty's standing in front of an unfinished building, and there's a board going right down the middle of the door. They haven't sawed it off yet. And I just go, yes, that's the way it was. I love that movie for the rawness.
Oh, that's awesome. Oh, how fun. We got to watch that one.
Yeah.
Yeah, because now we'll watch with different eyes.
It's been a long time ago.
Yeah. Okay, Mr. Courtney Joyner, and what would you say?
Well, it changes by the hour.
There you go.
I would say, given my mood today, Unforgiven.
Ah.
Okay.
And The Professionals.
Oh.
The Professionals.
All right. Jim, do you have a favorite Western?
Well, it's a toss-up here between Butch Cassidy and Sundance Kid and Tombstone. Yeah. But, you know, Unforgiven is up there pretty high. And I have to say, I like the Outlaw Josie Wales.
Oh, yes.
So, that's kind of my numbers there.
Yeah. Before we take our first
break. Hey, how about you?
Well, your mom. I like They Died With Their Boots On. Because it's Errol Flynn.
Yeah.
It was your mom's favorite movie,
and it was
right?
My mom's favorite movie. She was an Errol Flynn fan, and we liked Robin Hood too. But, you know, there's nothing Western except Trigger is in that movie.
You know the big secret about They Died With Their Boots On? First of all, the script was written by a woman.
Oh.
And the original screenwriters would not allow her to have credit.
Oh.
That's awesome.
Wow.
This became a real issue. And, yeah, they were very unfair to her. And she wrote that incredible farewell scene between Flynn and Olivia de Havilland. And the thing was, Olivia de Havilland was in the middle, remember, of her lawsuit to Warner Brothers about money. And she was leaving the studio. And Raoul Walsh knew this and knew that, in fact, she and Errol Flynn probably would never see each other again.
Oh,
so
my.
Scene the day before she left one of those.
Oh my.
Amazing, huh?
Well, we need to watch that again too.
It just, you know, I just dissolve with that scene. But you can see their connection in it.
Yeah.
You have amazing information, Court. Amazing.
That's why we loved it. You know, Bob, when we would get together with Court back in LA, we'd go and have lunch at the Trocadero right there on Newhall. And I would just listen, you know, he would just talk with whoever else was there. And I would just be like a sponge because I couldn't really participate. I didn't know anything, but Court just shares. And, you know, he can tell you the second director on the scene in the movie, you know, he can just tell you.
Yeah.
But it's not like trivia night. It's like you just want to, you know, you just wish you could, like, put your head next to his and download it all somehow, you know.
I'm not talking about how much I was drinking at lunch.
Well, I also couldn't argue with you about anything, you know, so. We're going to take a very quick break. I hope you're all having fun because we sure are.
Yeah, we are.
We're going to take a quick break and take a listen. One of our sponsors is Blue Cottage Agency. Are you a writer? Our sponsors, Blue Cottage Agency and Clicks by Madison, are standing by to assist you. Mm-hmm. And here's a special offer just for you. And when we come back, we'll be talking more with our pals from True West Magazine and beyond. Bob, Court, and Henry, don't go away. We'll be right back. Authors, welcome home. Every author needs a website, a home base for their brand. Professionally showcase your books and brand with a custom website landing page starting at $369. BlueBookshelf.com. It's a great feeling to be home. Contact the Blue Cottage team today to get started.
Welcome back. Welcome back to the Rendezvous with the Writer. We're talking to Henry Park, Bob Bowes Bell, and Courtney Joyner. And we're having a good time. But I think we want to talk right now to Bob Bowes Bell, the one that runs the True West magazine. And
among other things.
Among other things. So we got a bio. I forgot. We should read the bio. Stay with the script here. Bob Bowes Bell has been president and executive editor of True West magazine since 1999. He has written a dozen books on Old West characters like Billy the Kid, Wyatt Earp, and Doc Holliday. His work has appeared in several national magazines, and he can be seen on the series Gunslingers, which runs on the American Heroes channel. Welcome, Bob.
Hey, good to be here, man.
I have a little show and tell going on. I'm holding up various things. We went into our Bob Bowes Bell archive and, you know, in those library stacks and in our holders of True West magazines to, you know, just ferret out the very best. So we're so delighted to spend a little bit of time with you, Bob. You want to ask the first question that we have for Bob?
You know, what's this about growing up on Route 66?
Well, I grew up my formative years in Kingman, Arizona. My dad had Al Bell Flying A on Route 66, and I got my first gig. I iced jugs, and I don't know if you remember or not, but when you'd pull into a gas station in the 1950s, four guys would come out and attack your car. Out of the loop. Yeah. Ding, 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 ding. And out of the loop room came four guys. They had their name over their heart. They're wearing white uniforms. Mm-hmm. They have caps on. They got a name over their heart. First guy comes up the window and says, fill it with flight fuel, because we had name for our gas that back then. Okay. You get, the idea was you'd put that in your car and you'd just take off of the moon. Yeah. All the windows all the way around. All the windows all the way around. The third guy would check all the tires, even the spare, because he would say, wow, you're going to go across the most deadly desert in the world, and you need to have your tires checked. And then the fourth guy would go under the hood and cut all the fan belts.
Wow. And so, you know,
I was the fifth guy. I was wearing a Little League cap. I was on the auto. And I said, do you have any jugs you'd like ice free?
Oh, my goodness.
Had a thermos in their car because it was, you know, there was pre-air conditioning. Okay. Nobody had air conditioning.
Yeah.
I would take their jug. I would go into the lube room and fill it with ice and water and bring it back. And I got tips. And I found out very quickly that Texans tip the best and teachers are the worst. I saved up all summer and I bought a book for $11 out of True West magazine called The Biographical Album of Western Gunfighters. It's right here. Let me get it.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, and for those of you that are listening, Bob, we can see his office or his library or whatever, his workspace, and he's just gone. Oh, he's just gone to pull a book from. Oh, my gosh.
Isn't that a fabulous book? It is. It inspired me. I go to my grandmother's house, and my grandmother was from an old ranching family, and so she would tell me that we were related to outlaws, and my mother hated this. Okay, because we would be visiting people, relatives, and stuff, and I'd go, we're related to outlaws, you know. They couldn't own that account because I was thinking, you know, Bigfoot Wallace and John Wesley Hart and Billy the Kid, you know, and she was thinking of Charlie Manson and the Boston Strangler. Yeah, okay.
That is a great book. Yeah.
You can draw a direct line from this book to Owning True West. Well, the other thing that happened is when I was up at my grandmother's, and she would tell me all these outlaw stories, you know, she'd tell about how outlaws had come in the middle of the night. They had a ranch over in the Boot Hill of New Mexico. Okay. And it was 90 miles from Tombstone. Okay. And they're there in like 1900. And so she would tell about how they'd come in the middle of the night. My eyes were this big. And one night I said, can I watch TV? And she was kind of disappointed. But I wanted to, I didn't, it was Thursday night and I wanted to see my favorite show. And if you guys, I think a couple of you might be old enough, so I want you to sing it with me. Because I turned on the TV just in time to hear the theme sing. This is how it went. Wyatt Earp.
Wyatt Earp.
Pray for ages to long live its fame and glory and all.
May his story be told.
I remember that.
In the middle of the song. And I love the show because he drinks milk. He doesn't swear. He's a bachelor. He's cleaned up every cow town in the West. In the middle of the song, my grandmother's fingers pointing like this at the TV, and she says, Wyatt Earp was the biggest jerk who ever walked away. And I'm looking at the TV, right, which never lies. I'm looking at my grandma, and I'm going, wow, somebody's. And that's why I would buy True West, because it told the true stories. That got me started.
Oh my gosh. What a story, Bob. Thank you so much for sharing that. What a story. Yeah. Well, as Route 66, of course, we know is celebrating its 100th birthday this year.
Yeah.
In fact, this is kind of an important year. The Alamo March 6th commemorates 190 years. This is America 250. It's been kind of branded that. And we got to thinking the other day, we're like, okay, so let's see the Battle of the Bighorn. That was 1876. Oh, that's 145. And there's 100 and, well, I'm not, never been good at math, but it seemed like, it ends in a six and we end in a six. So it's got to be significant. And it just feels like there are a lot of things that this is a special year to be commemorating and paying tribute to. And it's kind of fun. Here in Albuquerque, we're seeing Route 66 neon signs, things being refurbished. I think some plans, throughout the summer. Is there anything where you live, Bob? Anything going on in Arizona that's...
On April 30th, I'm going up to Sligman, which is where the Snowcap Drive-In and Angel Delgadillo, the barber who actually cut my hair when I was younger. I'm going to see it all day event there to celebrate the centennial on Route 66. And then the day is the fun run where 900 cars take off and travel the long existing section of highway that still exists.
Yeah.
And that goes Sligman to Peach Springs to Hackberry, Kingman, my hometown, and then to Oakman and down to Topok. And I've driven it many times. My father had a 1949 Ford that was been in the family since it was bought at Senseth Motors in Forest City. And so we drove that every year, and it was just one of the most delightful memories I have of my father.
Oh, that's so fun. Courtney, is there anything happening in L.A.? Because, Route 66 ends in Huntington Beach. It ends in a beach town.
Santa Monica Pier.
Yeah. Santa Monica Pier.
Yeah, just as a casual observation, the Bob's Big Boy here on Riverside Drive, which is the original one, they usually host once or twice a month a big thing for all the antique car collectors. And the guys pull in, and it's like the old drive-in days. And Henry, you've been there a zillion times. Oh, yeah. With the roller skates, the whole thing. And they have been going nuts. I mean, these gorgeous automobiles, I think, are all getting ready for either a trek down Route 66 or coming back off. And, I'm just surrounded by cars I wish I owned.
Yeah. Do you want to ask Bob another?
Yeah, I want to ask.
Okay.
We're going to jump into the magazine, Bob. What's a typical day for you? Or is there such a thing as a typical day?
Well, we had offices from 2002 to 2020 during the pandemic. And we've worked remotely ever since. And I absolutely hate it. I miss the camaraderie of being in the office. And people would come and visit us, you know, people from back east and stuff. And they would come out to Cave Creek and come into the True West World headquarters. And we would meet, and we would have staff meetings in there. Now it's all on Zoom. Looks very similar to what we're doing here tonight.
Yeah.
And it works, but it's just not as to me, it's not as much fun, and it's it's very stressful because if I ever hear one more time, you're mute, Sean. If I never hear that again,
yeah,
so it's obnoxious, you know. And but anyway, a typical day involves trying to get articles that people would want to read and to get them in shape. With the right imagery, and then that's its own thing, is to find the imagery. We're doing a cover story on Sitting Bull for the 150th for the Little Bighorn, and Sitting Bull goes out, and so where do we find there's some pretty good pictures of him. We need a good map. We need to be able to put the reader there so that they know what's going on, and help them, and hopefully inspire them to want to read it. I love that part of it. Mm-hmm. I love dealing with writers, with everybody except Courtney. But, not Courtney, I'm sorry. Not truly. But anyway, I love the writers because they're my people. And what I hate is the HR stuff. And I was talking to I hate that. I hate firing people. I hate trying to tell somebody that, you know, it's not working. It's just awful, okay? I'm a cartoonist, for God's sake. You know, I just want to draw stuff and have fun. But I was talking to a friend of mine, Chuck Rankin, about being editor. And he just retired from Montana Magazine.
Oh, yes, Rankin.
Yeah, Chuck Rankin. And he said, somebody asked him what he liked. And it was basically what I just said, you know, working with writers, trying to develop, you know, Henry's doing a cover story for us on Robert Duvall right now, and damn it, it's due, son.
y'all have it tomorrow.
Get off the show, Harry.
I've heard that before.
he just put his tough hat on. Didn't
I
he?
Know. I think he's got that HR thing under his belt. Yeah.
Henry told me he's got some new pictures, which is great. One of them is they're digging the well at the beginning of Lonesome Dove, and I don't think that's been seen outside of the actual production.
Right.
And so we're looking for new stuff, a new way to represent that. Now, we put Robert Duvall on the cover a couple, three times. So we've used the great shot of him looking up. And I think we're going to go with the one of him. There's a famous shot of him with the Gus hat on looking down. It's a kind of a goodbye. And then I got to work with Henry on good cover heads, you know. And I think we have on there is a placeholder saying goodbye to Gus, which is, you know, it's a placeholder.
Yeah.
And we're hoping you come up with something much more groovy than that. And anyway, Chuck Rankin about all the cool stuff on putting the magazine together. And they said, well, what's the worst part? And he said, the details where you feel like you're being nibbled to death by ducks. I don't think anybody said it better than that. It's just, you know, I put the email from my production manager. We need photo credits on the entire article on Edward Peel, the father of the mother road. And I'm sitting here going, in the old days, I would assign this. I go out and go, hey, Carol, get somebody get those. Now it's on me.
It's on you. It's on you.
And I don't like that at all.
We are going to take one other very short little break. Just going to step away for a moment to tell you about one of the places you can order the books of many of our author guests, including tonight's guests. Find their books on the Out West Shop affiliate page on bookshop.org. And when we come back, there's more with Bob and Court and Henry. Don't go away. We'll be right back. Story is everything. Find a great one on Out West Shop's bookshop. Go to outwestshop.com Find books and CDs on the menu. Choose Shop Out West on bookshop.org. Browse through featured authors on Rendezvous with a Writer. Explore curated book lists and our featured picks. Add in note cards, calendars, and jigsaw puzzles. One-stop shopping for great gifts. Use the search box to find thousands more titles. Make the switch. Your purchase supports us as independent booksellers. That's our story.
Welcome back. Welcome back. We're talking to the folks at True West Magazine. Bob has just given some great stories.
How fun to have you on, Bob.
We have to say a little something here to Courtney, though.
Yeah.
And I got a bio, and I got to get this thing read. Courtney Joyner is an American author, screenwriter, director, journalist, and actor. Among the books that he has written are Shotgun, which is a Western series set in the 80s, Six Guns and Sleigh Bells, and Nemo Rising. And one of the Western Writers of America conferences, Chairman Paul Hutton and Johnny Boggs presented Courtney with an award for outstanding service to Western Writers of America. And we almost forgot, he's a close friend, and he's also our master of horror.
Oh, yeah.
And I must tell the audience here, you do not want to go to Courtney's house when it's dark and walk in by yourself because you're in real trouble.
You may never leave.
Yeah, so fun. You know, Courtney makes horror fun.
He does.
Yeah.
We had a Zoom call with a bunch of Western writers just the other day. And I started talking about you a little bit because of about the show. And I said, you were the master of horror. And I said, you folks ought to go out there and see, if you want to see a horror movie, a slasher, it's called Quadrant, Q-U-A-D-R-A-N-T. And I was amazed at how many people had seen it.
They raised their hand. Like, yeah, I saw it. I saw it.
It's fun.
Oh, well, thank you very much.
It's great. That's the last time you were with us, Court. We talked about that film. I have a question, Courtney, for you, and then we'll kind of throw it out to the group. As both a screenwriter and an author, is there a direction you'd like to see the Western go, perhaps to attract new writers and expand its audience?
There was a rumor after Once Upon a Time in Hollywood that Quentin was going to go ahead and executive produce a half an hour Western series. And I think that would have been fantastic. Because if you go back and you look at The Rebel, you look at The Deputy, you look at The Rifleman, Restless Gun, and Lawman, and all these things, the skill it took to construct those half-hour dramas was absolutely incredible, which is no wonder why so many of the writers of things like Lawman, like Richard Matheson, for example, all those guys ended up on the Twilight Zone.
Right.
And it is a format that just doesn't exist anymore. Mm. And I would love to see a return to that, because it also, I think, it brought out the very best in so many of the guys, you know, with the scripting chores.
Mm-hmm. That's a great point, Courtney. But I got to tell you, I've lived long enough now. When we first bought True West Magazine, they were still printing it on pulp paper. I don't know if you remember this. It was that old pulp paper from the 40s and the 30s, you know. And so I told my partners, who were not magazine people, they were El Paso Natural Gas guys, Bob McCubbin and his boss, Rick Bish. And I said, we got to go to the pulp. I was the slick. And they said, no. They didn't want to change it because they grew up with that. And I said, no, we got to change. We're going to die, guys. We got to go to slick. Now, I just had a meeting with a young buck guy who's the podcast king, yada, yada, yada. And he says, you know, slick is, that's for old people. We're into Matt covers.
Back to the Future, right?
And that is my answer to how much a half hour show is going to come back. I think I can't tell you how many times my wife and I are watching a movie now on Netflix or premium or whatever. And I go, I stop it and I go, how much long? An hour and 15 minutes more of this? I would love to have a half hour.
Yeah.
Oh, God. I couldn't agree more. And you know, what drives me crazy is on all the various streaming services, what they love to do is take a movie that worked really well. Well, I just talked about The Magnificent Seven. It's a tight, what, hour and 45 minutes? They're going to make it 8 hours. They did the Billy the Kid series for 36 episodes. He didn't live to 36. You know?
Yeah.
It's, you, oh, one more show I'd throw in, I don't think you mentioned, was Have Gun, Will Travel. Another half hour.
It's, oh, yes. That was a favorite of my mom's. Here's another observation, and we are all going to be almost out of time. So, but I want to ask this. We're watching TV like everybody, and it seems like every other ad is using a Western landscape. That's not unusual. They've always been used for car ads and things. But we got Western characters, you know. There's one right now where there's guys, I think they're running against a train, and one guy has his hair really blowing, and he goes to Amazon to buy scrunchies, and he gets a really big buck. It's like ad after ad after ad is using the Western landscape and Western characters. What can we do as creators in the Western field to take advantage of this hot, you know, are we already behind the eight ball? I don't know. It feels like there's momentum and there's a tide, there's waves, and I don't know how we catch it. I don't know. And we're almost out of time, so you probably can't even answer it.
Well, it's a complex question. What do you do when everything is here and, you know, it's overloaded here? Personally, my personal thing is I love stories on the border with Sugarloaf sombreros and stuff. I don't see enough of that. I hate bad hats. I think there's many new stories that could be told down in there. That's where I think it's going to go.
Yeah, new stories. Well, we are looking at time, and we would like each one of you to tell us, what are you working on next, and where can people find you? And we'll start, Henry, with you.
Well, as Bob said, I better be working on my Robert Duvall article. You're getting tomorrow. Cross my heart.
Yeah.
Beyond where to find me, you know, it's always at True West, and also, you know, my blogs for the INSP channel and Henry's Western Roundup, the online report on Western film production.
And you'll be back a month from today.
Yes, indeed.
And Mr. Courtney Joyner, where can people find you?
Well, wandering aimlessly down the street, you know.
Sepulveda Boulevard's good. Yes.
Yeah. There's an honest man right there.
Henry and I will be recording. What will it be, Henry? Like our 30th commentary together?
Oh, I think we already passed 30. I think like 35, maybe.
About 35. Yeah. We're doing Last Train from Gun Hill,
right?
With Kirk Douglas, John Sturgis directed. It's a wonderful movie, and we're going to be doing that for Kino in about 2 weeks,
right? Yeah. Cool. And, of course, we just, while I was back in L.A., we did Red Sun.
Yes, we did. For, who did we do that for?
I don't know. I just tag her in.
That was for Arrow.
Right.
And, yeah, they keep us jumping. And we have a very nice tributes to both William Holden and Andy McLaughlin on the new imprint Western Stats.
Okay.
That are coming out here. So that keeps us going. Yeah, and thank you for holding up poor old Nemo Rising.
One of my favorites.
Getting a Rebirth as a graphic novel.
Oh, cool.
It's coming out again, at Christmas time with the artwork by the amazing William Kaluta, who did, or I should say Mike Kaluta, who did all the artwork for The Shadow.
All right.
Yeah, comic legend, and he is tackling Nemo.
Cool.
It'll be on Christmas.
All right, Bob, and up to you now. What's next, and where can people find you?
I'm stepping down as the executive editor of True West Magazine after 27 years.
Oh, wow.
That will be in December. And then I would like to take a meeting with Courtney and Henry about two graphic novels I would like to do, one on Mickey Free.
On Mickey Free.
And the other one, I've got a story that I think is a movie called The Visadero, and it's based on the fact that there's a fine line between catching an outlaw and becoming one.
Ah, that's awesome. Okay, Jim, we're hoping Sam will let us go over a bit.
Well, this one is from Mr. Bob Bowes, okay? He says, work is only work if you would rather be someplace else. And I'm exactly where I want to be.
We thank you all for joining us. This was episode 174. We want to thank also Sam Hassan of LA Talk Radio, Blue Cottage, and Clicks by Madison. Next week, join us for another Full House with Dusty Saddle publisher, CEO Nick Whale, and two authors. We'll have Jackson Lowry with us to talk about the first of the American 250 series based on the Pathfinder, John Fremont. I couldn't put it down. Did not know anything about these characters until I read this book. And also we'll have Charles Ray with us with his book on Jim Beckwith. And that is next Thursday. You have a final comment?
As we always say, it's a great day out west.
Keep riding.
We'll keep reading.
We'll see you down the trail.
Thank you, folks. Really appreciate it.
See you at Muson Frank's, and Henry.
Oh, Ben, we'll be there.
Henry, you're picking up the check.
Always.
Good night,
all. On me.
Good night.
All right. Good night, man. Good night.